Recording is on.
Success. All right. Welcome everyone to the Verifiable Credentials API work item call. This is the first call of the year. Our agenda is here. This is our agenda. There it is. On the agenda today, we have just a quick discussion update on VC, the Verifiable Credentials Working Group, and getting the VC API through there. We should look at some PRs. I forgot to put that on the agenda, but we've got a couple of PRs that we need to process, so please don't let me forget to do that at the top of the call. And then we will have a discussion around Nate Otto's PR reference error schemas or errors, and then a discussion about AuthZ, authorization, and the exchange's endpoint. And then we'll talk about other issues and things as time permits. Are there any other updates or changes to the agenda before we get started? Anything else people want to talk about? Go ahead, Patrick.
If we have time, it came to my attention, a solution from Matter. It was called the Launchpad from Matter Labs. And I had a bit of a look, and I'm curious if we could see how this would fit into the VC API that we are discussing here.
Yep, sounds good. Let's put that at the front of the agenda, if you don't think that's going to take a while to do. Eric, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I just wanted to give a quick update on the use cases document since I was out last week. There should be the PR getting updates in the next hour or two, and I plan on pushing it over to Joe for final approval, kind of as we discussed. Just wanted to give another shout out to Tall Ted for all of his comments and suggestions. So thanks for that. That PR should go through hopefully end of day unless there's something weird that happens.
Excellent. Great. So that was an update on the use cases, right? Great. Thank you very much for that work. Is it worth taking a look at anything on the call today, Eric, do you feel?
Unfortunately not. I'm working on it right now. So.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. That sounds good. Thank you again for the update, and thank you, Ted, for your tireless work on making sure we convey the things we want to convey. All right. Let's pick up your item. Let's do quick intros, relevant community updates. I think, do we have anyone new here? I think we all know each other fairly well at this point. Alan, do you want to give a quick intro to yourself? I think most of us know you, but there might be some.
Yeah, I'm Alan Karp. I'm the capabilities guy. I've been lurking on this list for a while, and my mission is to keep you guys from making newbie capability mistakes that I myself made when I was a newbie.
Awesome. Thank you. And that's always appreciated, Alan. Pete, do you want to introduce yourself? You don't have to, but we'd love to hear a bit about your background if you want to share. If you're searching for the mute button, it's on the bottom left of the bar, but maybe not. Okay. Any relevant community updates or things of that nature? I have just a quick one, around status list 2021 that's been moved to the VC working group. It's arguable that there is a part of status list 2021 that is pseudo dependent on the VC API. We certainly have it in our diagrams, that a status list service would exist, and, it is unknown what that overlap is, but basically anything that, the spec, the status list 2021 spec will say is kind of sort of out of our control, except a good chunk of us are in that group. So, anyway, just a heads up that that's moved to the official working group and is a standards track work item at this point. Patrick, you're up.
Yeah, just wanted to give a few updates about what's going on here in Canada. So the ID Lab is officially helping the province of Quebec for their digital ID program since just before the holidays. Parallel to that, Newfoundland announced last week they were starting the POC for their digital ID program as well. So I think we'll see a lot of things happening there. The other thing, the Aries agent test harness maintainers are looking into integrating the VCAPI test suites into their flow somewhere. So at the moment, it's just a bit of observation on how that would be possible. And that's it for me. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Patrick. Appreciate that. And exciting news. Do you know what kind of technologies Quebec and Newfoundland have picked, or is that still up in the air? Or
so at the moment, Quebec, Ontario, and BC are sort of collaborating on a pan-Canadian blockchain initiative working with Hyperledger Indy. So this is very much an action mostly led by BC. The other provinces are learning the technology. For Newfoundland, there was not much information, but I'm assuming they will join this network once it's a bit more mature.
Great. Thank you for that, Patrick. And certainly please keep us up to date if you find out anything new. That's interesting. Interesting developments. Okay. Any other announcements or introductions before we get into topics? Patrick, let's start with yours. So this is the Matter launchpad, I think.
Yeah. So I just discovered this solution today. Someone showed it to me, and I thought it was cool. Maybe you can tell me more about it. I'm assuming you're familiar with this, this platform. Pardon?
Sorry, I was muted. I've seen it in a demo here and there, but I'm not familiar with it. So do you have a link?
Yeah, I can share the link. Basically, they offer three examples of credentials that you can issue. Three proof of concept. Once you go through the step, you get to a certain point, so you can pretend to be a specific user. And then it generates you a QR code, and this QR code is a DidWeb URL, and it says open in wallet. So I was just curious, like, how could the VCAPI be leveraged to ingest this information if possible? Or if I'm misunderstanding the principle here.
Yes, we have seen this. So in the Jobs for the Future Plugfest number 2, it's this launch pad that the OpenID Connect folks used to do the interactions.
Okay.
So this is very much, as far as I understand it, focused on OpenID Connect.
Okay.
And those mechanisms, but again, I might be totally wrong on this. It was kind of created as an OIDC version of the Chappie Issuer Playground, which uses, VCAPI, and Chappie. So it's got two protocols that it uses today to move credentials from an issuing platform to a wallet. It uses just straight Chappie. And then Chappie to provide a VCAPI endpoint, which then you do a VCAPI exchange. And Coyote implemented a full version of that in the Jobs for the Future Plugfest 2. So I think it's similar in nature to that. Let me see if I can share.
You said a coyote. What's the duck?
Coyote. Are you?
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Hey.
Yeah, are you referring to the exchanges workflow?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So basically, that's exactly right. You use the leverage the Chappie playground that Manu is showing right now to engage in the exchanges workflow from a native wallet. And I'm happy to answer any questions related to that. Is there any?
Yeah. So as far as I think, Patrick, I understand it, these two sites effectively do the same thing. The Matter Launchpad does it for OpenID, for VCI. And the Chappie Playground does it for VCAPI and, Chappie, two protocols. Go ahead, Dave.
I just had a quick question because, Patrick, you said that the QR code has a DID web URL in it. I would have expected it to be an OpenID initiate issuance URL so that, when that QR code comes up, if you use a wallet that supports OpenID Connect, verifiable credential issuance, it could scan that QR code and get that OIDC for VCI URL.
It is an initiate issuance code.
Okay. Yeah. So this playground is just doing delivery of the credential, this launch pad is doing delivery of the credential through OIDC for VCI instead of through the VCAPI. You could build a similar site that used the VCAPI in the background to do all of the issuance, and verification stuff. But, the VCAPI does delivery either directly through Chappie or through exchanges URLs. And so this OIDC for VCI QR code is an alternative to that mechanism. You could, put a exchanges URL in a QR code to do it through VCAPI, but effectively what's going on is different protocols being spoken to do the delivery.
Okay, cool. Interesting. I will definitely spend more time experimenting with it. Very interesting. And just a side note, I totally forgot to the community update. So we had a consultation with a company called Volti, and they want to develop test suites for OIDC for verifiable credential. So I don't know if it's a organization that you've heard of before.
Have not heard of them, but that's interesting. Actually, no. Volti, yeah, I've heard of them. Forget where. But I've heard of them.
That's it. These Thank folks. I don't know much about how far off they are, but it was something they're interested in.
Yeah. They haven't, I don't think they've participated in any of the plug fests to date, but does anyone know? Has anyone interacted with them? Okay. So, don't know. I think that would be a very useful thing to have in the ecosystem now is just more test suites for interoperability so people can test. It's still, a little too hard to demonstrate interop these days. And I think we're, actively working on this across the multiple protocols. Okay. So I'll stop screen sharing there. And Patrick, did that cover, that covered the launchpad thing you wanted to chat about?
Yeah. I took some notes and I'll play around, when I have some downtime at work.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. The next thing up we should probably do is, pull request review. We have one of these pull requests listed later. So I'll skip that one, but the other ones we should take a look at. Let me share my screen. So just real quick, we had two pull requests that had been out there for a while. So Andrew Jones has put quite a number of just bug fix things into the spec. These are issues that he found while implementing the VC API, the test suites for the, some of the VC API things. And so, like this, you know, the continue here using, post and not put and, updating some of the examples. So the last 4 days, these are the three that we ended up pulling in. They were out there for a while. So just a heads up to folks that, we pull these in, take a look at them. I don't think that they were controversial. You know, things like adding a description to the, like, you know, adding descriptions to some of the, like the error response, right? This was leading to some bad renderings. Next item up, is, look at the pull requests. This one we're going to talk about here in a bit. Preparing the document for publication as a VCWG item. This one I think is still a work in progress, adding 404 as a response for get and delete, to make it align with VPs. I think Andrew currently has this as a draft, so it's been approved, but we're not, he needs to, I guess we need to ping him to make it an actual PR so that we can pull it in. 323 adds verifiable presentation request to Exchange initiate. I believe this is an error. I think Longley, you looked at this and I looked at this and, I think the error that's being made here is that he's adding a top level verifiable presentation request, which will make it double nested in the rest of the spec. So we need to, this PR probably just needs to be rejected unless he has a reason he's doing that. We'll have to see.
Part of the PR was required. We wanted to add that property somewhere. And I think the problem was that, it made the schema for verifiable presentation request have the property within it.
Yeah.
So we still needed the property somewhere. So there's some slight, problem with how a particular problem was being addressed, I think is what's going on.
Okay. All right. So we need to fix that. Anyway, there's a block on that one to pull it in until that's fixed. 326 we'll talk about later today. 327, so Joe, Eric, just a heads up to both of you, I just redid the diagram that was there and updated it to coordinator, and there are Google drawings that people can copy and modify, and I'm not claiming that it's good. I tried to keep the exact same kind of layout. I changed the symbology here a little bit, because Google Draw was doing weird things with, padding that made it look ugly. Added the disk thing for storage service, tried to modify the language here a bit. But again, I'm totally not wed to any of this. I just was trying to get it into a format that all of us could edit. So there's a PRN for that.
Great. That's good. I hadn't realized we could look at it in the way that you're sharing right now. So when I went to go look at it, I'm like, oh, I guess I got to download the repo and whatnot. But this looks great so far. I will put an eyeball on it to look at the nuances you just mentioned.
Awesome. Thanks. And feel free to just suggest changes or just clone the Google Doc, or I can just give you access to it and you can modify it as you see fit. There's a README in the directory that links to, it says for this SVG, go to this Google Doc. So that's the only way I could think of conveying that easily in the repo. Everything else remains the same as far as I can tell.
Cool.
Okay, so there's that one. There are two other PRs that I put in here. We have been operating for quite a while without a introductory section in the spec. And so now there is this chunk of text that was added as an introduction. Ted has already suggested changes that I think are excellent. So it will need to rework the language a bit. I got trapped in the internal versus external API delineation, public versus private. And that's just language we wanted to not use. And Ted came up with better language. So I'm going to try and apply that. So we have an introductory section. I don't know if it's good or not. Please take a look at it and improve it if you feel there's a better way to approach it. The other one is just a design goals and rationale PR. And again, I'm just trying, this was completely blank. I tried to put in a couple of goals like modularity, simplicity, composability, extensibility, and explain why, you know, these are goals for the API. So that text exists now. It's fairly generic. It does apply. It's just not, it's not a hand wave, but, other people might have other goals that they wanted to put in there, or you might want to modify the text. I was trying to keep things kind of short and sweet here. And when we talk about design goals and rationale, then we go into architecture overview. One of the things that is striking me right now looking at this is that, we don't refer to the use cases, and we totally should. So Eric, once that's, you've got your PR in, then, we can refer to use cases in the introduction. And there's also a related documents part here that we can add and link to it up there. But we should totally do that. Okay. That's the entirety of kind of the PRs. Are there any comments, concerns about any of that stuff? This was raised 2 days ago. We've got, you know, until next Sunday to effectively wait to pull them in. So you have until then to review, but at a high level, any questions, concerns about the PRs? All right. Well, there they are. Okay. Back to our agenda. Thanks all for the support emojis. okay, so the next item up is our publication in the Verifiable Credentials Working Group. We had mentioned this before the break. This PR, there was a PR that was put together to prepare the VC API for it to be pulled into the Verifiable Credentials Working Group. We removed, what we felt were maybe the controversial features in the VC API, which is the exchanges stuff, all the exchanges stuff, thinking that, people wouldn't find issue, you know, too much issue with the spec as a note, and we'd be able to pull it into the Verifiable Credentials Working Group. It was listed as a, as something in the charter that we could do and we could publish. But as folks saw on the Verifiable Credentials Working Group, there were a number of organizations that took exception to it. Microsoft especially, is taking exception to the work being pulled into the Verifiable Credentials Working Group. And because of the W3C transition to a legal entity, which by the way, we're in January and W3C Incorporated exists. People thought it might not, but a transition happened, money was moved over, the staff have gotten offers, they're working, not out of the woods yet, but W3C exists in 2023, which, you know, was a chance that it wasn't going to, last year. But because of that transition, the questions that we had sent to the W3C staff, they were dealing with larger fires than whether or not we could publish the VC API and the Verifiable Credentials Working Group, so that got put on hold. And where we are now is kind of in limbo with the VC API. There are a couple of options forward. One of them is to publish it as a note in the Verifiable Credentials Working Group. That is in charter. We put that in the charter for the Verifiable Credentials Working Group because we wanted to publish this, the VC API in that group, and then pave the way for another, pave the way to make it standards track. Because of the pushback specifically from Microsoft, we're second guessing if that's the best approach for it. So all other alternatives is we could ask for a new working group, which would probably be a successful endeavor because we have we have 17 people that implemented the API in Jobs for the Future Plugfest 2. Like we can demonstrate that there's interest in that. People have implemented it and will provide implementation feedback. That's not an issue. So we could have a separate working group, but then it's weird to have the verifiable credentials data model group and the verifiable credentials API group. And I'm sure they'd talk with each other, but it would probably be much easier to just do it all in one group. So we could ask for another working group. We could pull it into the VCWG, which people have already said they're going to fight that. And then it comes down to a process question on whether or not we can do that. We could ask for another working group, which will take time. It'll take months to probably charter a new working group, which needs its own set of chairs and its own staff contact and all that kind of stuff. We could decide to hold back and continue to incubate it here, while we get a little more clarity, while W3C Incorporated gets its feet under it and, you know, gets back to regular operations, while the verifiable credential specs make a little more progress. It's kind of it's an open question to this group. Okay. Sorry. That was a lot of background, but that's kind of what's going on now. Thoughts, feelings, concerns about, next steps. Does anyone have strong feelings about any one of those options or a new option? Patrick, you're on the queue.
More of a question, but when you say something, like some folks push back against the VC API, like, do you need a unanimity for something like that to go through, or it's a bit not so clear, or do you need majority, or is it a vote-based issue, or?
Excellent question. Joe's on the queue, and I'll put myself after.
Yeah, I'll comment a little bit on that. Although it's in charter, ultimately the group decides what it's going to do, and anything that happened outside the group beforehand is considered not binding, so that the group is free to figure out within its scope of membership what that group decides is appropriate. And I guess the comment I got on the queue for was, I think a separate working group probably is going to be easier. I think, VC API conflicts with, some other big organizations' goals for how they want to see the ecosystem move forward. And I appreciate that they don't want this particular API tainting the VC work because that's how they see it. They see other ways to deliver credentials. And if we separate it into its own working group, maybe that'll give us the freedom to sit down and solve the problem the way we want to solve it, as we've started here.
Yep, that's an excellent point. Exactly what Joe said. It is up to the group. It's debatable whether or not a minus one. You don't need unanimity to pull work in. That's not supposed to be how it works. You need to have consensus when you decide to push it forward to candidate recommendation. Traditionally, that's the way it's been. But the W3C process is that you can debate little bits here and there. So traditionally, you're not supposed to block work that has multiple implementers and a spec and people willing to work on it. That's not, it was traditionally viewed as just socially, antisocial as, to block work without a good technical reason. Like this is going to break the internet. That is what we're expecting to happen. The VCWG has become a bit, contentious, because of some of the larger players that have joined that have strong opinions about how the verifiable credential ecosystem should.
When you say like the big players that are, isn't that like some form of like lobbying?
Yeah.
Dare I say?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. But I mean, you know, we're all there lobbying, right? I mean, you could argue that, you know, the little company, it's a bit different when a large tech company throws their weight around in a working group versus a small tech company, which doesn't really have that much weight to throw around, right? It's also, there's been some gaming of process, both, well, behind the scenes and in front of the scenes. But that's, you know, but verifiable credentials is no stranger to that. That these same companies have been trying to, you know, slow, kill, modify, take over the work in various ways since the beginning, since, you know, 2014. So, you know, that's just kind of where that's the environment we're dealing with. But it used to be that, some of these organizations were outside, you know, throwing stones, into, you know, the tent, and, now they're inside the tent, you know, throwing stuff around. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't realize I was on the queue twice there. In a modest defense of these large players, you know, standard making is a mess. And I don't like some of the things that's been happening, but the verifiable credential standard itself does not depend on the exchange protocols. So I can appreciate that. Hey, let's keep these boundaries clean. They're doing it for strategic reasons because they have some other API that they prefer, but the VCWG work itself, I don't think is innately sort of tainted or messed up by this sorts of shenanigans. It does make it hard for us to incorporate an alternative transport mechanism, which is sort of what we bumped into. So hence my advocacy that maybe a separate working group is worth it, even though it's a lot of extra effort.
Okay. Yeah.
Because like reading the documentation, like one big distinction I'm seeing with the work that's been on VCAPI, it's a lot more of a technical approach, as like the VC data model, for example, is more like just a specification that doesn't really tell people how to do stuff. And I see VCAPI maybe is, I want to say like tightening the screw a little bit on how to do stuff. So that's like one distinction I could see. I don't know if that has to play with these decisions.
Yeah, I don't know how much it's driving the decisions. That is, I mean, your read on it's right. I mean, we're trying to actually get to, you know, moving these credentials around, not saying that they just exist.
Yeah.
So I'm hearing that maybe what we want to do is just prep a new working group charter for verifiable credential API. And understanding that that's going to take a while. And of course, you know, the current VCWG also has a say in that. It's not just, you know, us that gets to note things there. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah. One of the important things for, a new working group like that is getting an idea of how many people would be actively joining and participating in those calls. How many of the people, because if you're a member of the W3C CCG, you don't necessarily have to be a W3C member and pay member dues. So it would be good to get an idea of how many of the members, how many of the CCG members and people that have been participating on these calls would be involved in the working group.
Yep. Exactly. Coyote, do you want to vocalize your question? I think it's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, I think for this one, it kind of feels like the new working group would be sort of like the little brother or kind of like black sheep that's been trying its best to make a case for itself to be incorporated into the larger VCW working group, which is, I think in many people's eyes, the main working group for verifiable credentials. I agree that it's technically different. It's different things we're specifying as far as like schema, versus, protocol. But it kind of like, because of the fact that most people are already there and that's kind of the center of gravity is the way I see it. I just wonder what kind of challenges it could levy on this group. So I don't have a clear idea of like what that would look like, but it's just something I felt that I should vocalize.
Yeah. That's a good point. There is always the risk. I mean, it's, you know, there's always the risk that, well, looking at it from like a process gaming standpoint, sometimes you want a work item to kind of be split off from the main thing so that you can kill it or formally object that it should get started or give it a harder time starting up. So there is that potential. It can turn out really well because if nobody formally objects to it and the group gets started, then you have a group of people that are motivated to work on that thing and it's very tightly focused on that thing. The danger there, of course, is that we will not be able to pull some of the community in for that work, because you have to be a W3C member to do it. And if only, you know, a handful of W3C members show up, there's a chance that people that are hostile to the work could join the group and kind of disrupt it. So, there are benefits and drawbacks to the approach. And Ted, you're right. Invited experts are a thing. And so we could invite experts into the group. But of course, then, you know, that decision is up to the chairs and the staff contact. And if you have good, welcoming, inclusive chairs, that works out well. But I've seen groups where the staff was pushed by management to basically say no to invited experts. Because usually when you get too many invited experts in the group, W3C members that are paying dues get kind of cranky. Okay. I think we've probably talked about this enough. I'm not hearing super strong opinions one way or the other than maybe we should look into, a separate working group for the item, understanding that it could take up to a year to get that started. If we started on the charter now and it was circulated, you know, in the next 6 months, the soonest it would probably be up for a vote would be October of this year. And that's a long time to wait. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, Mano, I know you talked about that as one of the alternatives. I missed, were there other alternatives that were proposed?
Yeah, just pull the work. So we could do two things with the current working group. We could pull the work into the current working group. If there's agreement to do it, or if process allows us to do that, or we could recharter the current working group and say, once we're done with the data model stuff, the working group's going to work on the verifiable credential API. And that might go a little faster because we already have a group set up, and recharters tend to go faster than a totally new group being created.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
Recharter could take it. Once we decide to do a recharter, it could take 3 months to 5 months, maybe. If we decide to do a working group, it could take 8 months to a year. And then if we decided to just pull the work into the existing VCWG, it's just the group votes to do that and it happens. But then of course the specification won't have any standards. It won't be a standard until the group is rechartered to publish it as a standard. So those are the options. All right. Let's get into some of the technical discussion. So next up is reference what we're going to do about errors across the API. So Nate Otto did a PR recently, 326, that basically raised the question, what are we doing for errors? So we have error codes that are listed in the specification, and we have this error response object, but we're kind of like picking and choosing where we use it. It's not used everywhere. And so the question is, when there is an error, should we always provide an error response? And the error response contains, I forget, it's like an ID / code, a description, and details. So we can add it to this one call he's got. I forget what this call is. this is the get credentials by ID call. We'll throw an error and explain why. For a 404, and there's a question of like, should we be doing that for a 404? But should all of these other error codes, all these other HTTP errors have an error code, error response object in the response? Thoughts, questions, concerns? Go ahead, Dave.
I'm ambivalent about it. I think it's most important to get the status codes right. And, you know, we've been doing that so far. It's just a question of whether implementers want all of the error JSON to have to be the same for all of these APIs. Becomes more important if there's any particular values that should be sent back to be acted upon along with the error messages, as opposed to all of the information being adequately communicated via the status. If we do decide to use some common error thing, if we're going to invent our own, we need to figure that out. And if we're going to, ideally, we wouldn't invent our own, and we would turn to some other specification to do it, provided that it matches what we're trying to accomplish here and that other specification is actually used by other people in the community.
You mean for error codes?
For error codes or even just the error data model. I know that there's some RFC that maybe Mark Nottingham put together at some point for HTTP errors that we could look at. I don't know if anyone uses that. And I don't know if it fits our use cases. I know that it might not quite match up with how errors are returned from some implementations today. A number of implementations use like the name field for errors because that matches how errors are implemented in, for example, JavaScript and on the web. And that might create a difference that might be problematic for a W3C spec. So those are also considerations.
I had a question. I don't know if Paul's still on the queue.
I don't think so. Sorry, I forgot to ask him.
My question is there, or what is the framework for extensibility in those responses? I think, especially in error codes, it seems like there may be open-ended things you may want to pass back.
The current error object we have has a code. So, you get the HTTP code, and then in the error response, there's like an ID, not found or something like that. And then there's a description, which is just a textual description that it doesn't have to be what's in the spec. It can be in the native language of the, entity calling, for example. And then there's a details object that's arbitrary. People can put an arbitrary amount of data in there. And I think that's the extensibility model there. So the description field extensible in that you can put anything kind of you want in there as long as it's accurate. And then the details object can have an arbitrary data placed into it. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of using the ID field the way that was described, because we use the ID field in all of the other data to describe specific objects. And it sounds like the ID field for errors, if used in that way, would be not an ID of a specific error, but more or less the name or type of an error. And it seems like we should be using a different field like name or type for that error.
Yeah, I agree. But when you were talking about extensibility, I was expecting that you would say, hey, you go take the ID and you can go get more information on that error. But if it is the category of the ID, then there's no way to get specific information based on it.
Okay.
And let's give Manu a second to type that up because we talked way too fast for him.
Okay, so I am forgetting exactly what's in there today. Well, the first question is, do we want to always return an error? I'm hearing, no, we can depend on the error code for most of it and only in places where you actually want to add more information. Do you, return an error? That's one option. The other option is it's up to the implementation to return an error object or not. There may be some error codes where the spec definitely wants to return an error, in specific details. And those will be dealt with on a case by case basis. Option that before we look at details in the error object.
Your mic got a little muffled, Manu, but Ted's on the queue.
Sorry. Go ahead, Ted.
Yeah, I'm pretty good with mandating sort of minimal requirements, but also allowing for larger responses. And as a troubleshooter, I absolutely want to be able to get the biggest error I can. So this might be a configurable thing. It might be switchable, whether it's by, you know, user basis or the admin has to push a button or whatever. That sort of thing is, I think, implementation specific, but I definitely want to leave the door open for implementations to provide really sufficient information to troubleshoot whatever it is that's erroring for whatever reason. Because I know we only write perfect code, but somebody's going to do something someday.
Yeah. Okay. What about, are we mandating that an error always be returned on an error when an error code's raised? I'm suggesting let's not do that. I think it's too heavyweight. Go ahead.
I'd say we shouldn't do it until we find that we need to do it. And I don't think that anyone here is saying that we know that we need to do it anywhere yet. I'm trying to think if there are cases I know where we should, if we're not already, be returning error codes for like duplicate issued VCs. But again, that's like a 409 status code can indicate that. So I think we need to find cases where the HTTP status code is insufficient. And if it's insufficient, then we would mandate something. But until then, we should just say that you can return. If you are going to return an error, you can return it. We expect you to return JSON of some kind, but we don't have to say what it is. And it could be implementation specific, as Ted said, both for what you return and whether or not it's configurable to return the biggest error, as Ted put. So I think until we know that we need something more than this, we shouldn't mandate that people do something.
What about if, can an implementation decide to return an error code where the spec doesn't say to return one?
By error code, do you mean,
or an error response?
Yeah, I certainly think implementations should be allowed to return, errors. But, at this time, they should be understood to be implementation specific. So no one using it should rely on that to be the same across different implementations.
Plus implementations, unless it is specified, be the same by the specification. Go ahead, Patrick.
Yeah, I agree with this. I think covering all status code possible is a must. For a case that might need more information, I'm thinking maybe some kind of specification that two different errors could return the same error code. It would be good to know the reason for it. in the case that some implementer would want to return more detail about the error, I think it would be a good idea to have a sort of a predefined schema for how error bodies should be, but leave the content at the ends of the implementer. That would be the what comes to mind for me.
Okay, that is helpful. Thank you. Any other input on this? I think basically where we are right now is saying that by default, you use HTTP error codes to return errors. Where it is, implementers can always choose to include an error response object if they want to. And the specification may in the future standardize some error response values if we think that that's a good thing to do at a later date. So I think in general that's what we're saying. Are there any objections or disagreements to that kind of phrasing or that approach? Using HTTP response codes, some implementers may return an error response if they it's just implementers may return error response for any HTTP error. The specification may at a later date define specific error responses in specific situations. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I worry that using the camel case error response here is a little perhaps too prescriptive. This is making it sound like if you're going to send an error response that has to match this schema. And I think what we want to do instead is say this is a suggested schema, but you can do whatever you want. And then we should additionally probably bike shed what that schema is, since people, well, since it's there, people will use it, or we should remove it. Because if we're not, one of the reasons not to say anything is, if multiple people aren't implementing this and interoping on it, then we might have made the wrong decision. And then there might be people that are going to need to change what they've done. And there will be pushback on that, because the spec even made a suggestion. And so unless we're going to expend the effort to make this error response thing good and match what we think is a good idea and have put a significant amount of work into that, it might be better to just say you can send a response. The response is expected to be JSON, for example, since all the other data here is JSON, and leave it at that.
Okay. Okay, well, I think this is ready for a PR, and then we can bike shed the PR. Noting what you just said, Wally.
Yeah, if you can just have some note that says we might want to just say that the error response is JSON and not use any suggested schema, that can be bike shedded in the PR.
Go ahead, Patrick.
I'm just thinking also, like, if we go back to the test suite, like in the case we would want to have like a negative test, you know, like to test like an invalid credential ID or whichever, and we want to analyze the response to match the test, might be better to do if there's this like predefined error schema, and that could be another reason why it would be good.
Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I think if we're going to do that, then that's a case where we would just mandate you must have this in the response. So if the test suite's going to depend on that, that's what people would implement to, and then there would be some semblance of interop around it. So either the test suite's just going to look for HTTP status codes, which might be better here, since we don't really know what we want the errors to be, or we find cases where we do think we know what we want the errors to be, and then we mandate those. But I don't think we should do something sort of in between that, because it ends up being de facto what people are required to do, and we just didn't say it, and we didn't get the put in the effort to make sure it's what everybody wanted.
All right, got a thumbs up from Patrick. Okay, so noting that we're more or less at time, I am going to. Oh, this was already PR. This should probably have been. Where's the convert to issue button? Reference a new issue. Let's see, specify how error values, specify if, error details, specify how error details are, returned. Okay, so create issue, and then we will mark this as ready for PR. Okay, that's that item. Thank you, everyone, for the discussion around that. Apologies for not getting to the exchanges endpoints discussion. We will start the next call with this item and a few other issues. Thanks, everyone, for the great call today. Appreciate it. Have a wonderful rest of your week, and we will meet again next week. Take care. Bye.
Cheers, all.